AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hi, I'm Jim. Welcome to the Unbound Performance Podcast, where we explore the world of sports and performance mindset training.
And I'm Caroline. Each week, we talk about the strategies, habits, and mental framework that help us to excel. Let's get into today's episode.
Yeah, there's more stuff I wanted to talk about in this
book.
Oh, it's really good. Like, it's really good. Like, I'm angry that I waited.
How did you hear about it? Like, where did this begin for you?
Well, I follow Arthur Brooks on whatever social media. He's got a podcast. And I've always, I'd seen the book, like in Barnes & Noble or whatever. Picked it up. Oh, that looks really interesting. I have to get this. But for whatever reason, I didn't look trigger. I listened to one of his podcasts. I was like, that is just so great. I'm buying the book. So then I bought the book. And then because the subtitle is like the second half of your life, finding your purpose or whatever. I figured out that like I have like moved in this direction, you know, just by intuition, good fortune, whatever. But then I said, I need to go ahead and read it.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, what a fool I was to not have read it immediately upon purchase. It's just outstanding. At some point towards the end of last episode, talked about this woman who's later in her career's finance type and uber successful, but she had said something to the effect that she really preferred to be or to consider herself special as opposed to happy. And
she considered herself that be, or
she would rather like consider herself special in terms of her accomplishment than happy. And she said, anyone can do the things it takes to be happy, go on vacation, spend time with friends and family, but not everyone can accomplish great things, which is wow. One, I applaud her courage to go ahead and actually say
that out loud.
That's a lot of self-knowledge. And that she would say it to another person who's very thoughtful. But I thought, at some point, she may already be getting there.
Yeah.
Like, she's in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, like, she recognized her performance was not quite what it used to be, and her successes were fewer and far between. Then what? And that's, I don't know, when we reduce ourselves to that, we've really dehumanized ourselves.
I think using the term reducing yourself too, because it's not just like, oh, it's sort of the opposite take on, you know, I put value or I think I'm only worth whatever. But when you say like I'm reducing myself to only being someone who performs well or someone who earns a lot of money or someone who fill in the blank, if I think it's helped like easier for me to view it. I mean, more painful to admit, right? But easier to view and want to correct of like I'm reducing myself to something that is not forever. It's not what I ultimately want to be remembered for or recognized as. We were talking right before this, obviously, about, you know, like, who do you want to, like, what do you want people to describe you as? I was telling you, like, I love when I meet someone, I'm like, God, that's just like a good person. And I don't know that I can like define what that is, but you kind of know it when you see it. And that's something to me that you can carry through friendships, through work, through parenthood, if you have it, through marriage if you have it forever. Whereas, hey, that guy makes a lot of money, or that guy's been really good and he sold his business. And like, by no means are those things that we want to discount as successes. Like, they're good things they should be proud of and they probably worked really freaking hard for. But I don't want to define that person as that. Like, I would way rather at the end of the day say I knew someone over my lifetime that was just a really damn good person and helped me when I needed, or was there to lend an ear, or always smiled at my kids, or whatever those things are. I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, well, and he also did this, or even put that success first. Like, I'm going to, whether it's a guy, I'm saying using a guy as an example, but I think you had those people in your life where you just know, like you're one of those for me, for what it's worth. Like, you just know people that you want to have in your circle. And you can't necessarily say always what it is specifically, but you have people that are just like going to be there for a long time. And to me, that's way better than, like, yeah, if I tell people about you, like, yeah, we won state championships together and you coach and you were really successful at Gibbons and all this, but before that and after that, it's like, but here's why we stayed in touch this for all this time. Like, that's to me what's more important than, oh, well, he won a lot of state championships. Like, yeah, you worked hard for that and that's a great accolade, but that's not who you are to me, because here we are, that's over, and we're still here. So something bridged that gap from, you know, one thing to the other. And I think that's ultimately what we want to have as people, that is hard to figure out. Like you said earlier, like, thank God you figured it out. And maybe it's not fully figured out, but being on the way to doing so.
Well, we so fall for the, well, into the trap of thinking that success, like whatever it is, making lots of money, getting promotion, winning games, whatever, that those will bring happiness, satisfaction, fulfillment, whatever. They do bring momentary happiness. Like, we won, yay. But I will say it increasingly became just a sense of relief.
Yeah.
And at some point, that just isn't as interesting anymore. And... you know, we were talking offline earlier. We will all freely admit, agree with the idea that objectifying someone else is morally wrong. If we just limit or reduce someone to, like, whatever, someone based on their physical beauty, that's how they have worth, or won a bunch of games, that's how they have worth. And I just read this book by, it's a novel by A.J. Quinnell. It's 30 years old. He wrote the Man on Fire book that they made a movie with. They made a bad one with Scott Glenn and then a good one with Denzel Washington. But it's the same character, Marcus Creasy, in the novels, but he winds up pursuing these people who basically are slave traders, sex traffickers, and you talk about, like, the picture of reducing someone to just a physical entity, and that's it. It's just evil. Yeah. And, you know, so none of us are going to posit that, well, winning X number of Super Bowls makes you a more worthy human than someone who hasn't. Now, honestly, though, in our culture, like, we do elevate that. And I totally understand it. There's, you know, nothing wrong with that on a healthy level. Yeah. And you can acknowledge, like, yeah, they worked really hard. Now, the trick is, like, when we also acknowledge that as wrong as we think objectifying someone else is, we routinely do it to ourselves.
Yep.
We reduce ourselves to this object, you know, where, you know, and we talked earlier, like, I'm looking in the mirror when I'm 17, how shredded am I? What do my arms measure? You know, you probably weren't worrying about how big your arms were,
but yeah,
but different kinds of measurements, yeah. I'm guessing. And that is, that never ends. Like, you never arrive, you know, and then
what's always one, what's the next goal? And then now what? And I think it's one of those things too, where you have to also ask yourself, like, for what?
Yeah.
Like, that's a big realization I've had more recently, is I still, and I figured this out like 5 or 6 years ago, but I'm back here again, like remembering, remember what you figured out. Why? I train hard because I enjoy it. But like, what am I training for that I need this to have this measurement of like what's good enough or what's enough? Like, why do I have to burn X number of calories, or why do I need to be able to lift X amount of weight? And when you can like be honest with yourself and say like, well, like, there's no reason for me to need to do that. Like, you know, figuring, I mean, if you enjoy it, great. But I think that's just one of those things where like, you got to keep on checking in with yourself, because it's easy to go to that place. Like, I was telling a friend recently who's, you know, I don't know a single woman that doesn't struggle with body issues, from the most beautiful to the heaviest, to the skinniest, to the pregnant, to the, like, everyone has something that they're dealing with. And that's just part of life. But I was saying, I said to her, I said, there's something really silly that I've started doing, which is, if I go, like, I used to go out to dinner with friends, have a great time, have a couple of drinks, eat more than I typically would, whatever. And then I would come home and stare at myself in the mirror when I'm full and bloated and full of salt and alcohol, like, and be mad at myself. Instead of being like, hey, you had a really good time with your friends, I'm staring at myself in the mirror, I'm getting on the scale. Like, why? You know you're going to weigh more than you did this morning when you had an empty stomach. Like, what's the purpose? Like, I don't allow myself to even go there. I'm already maybe in my head of like, oh, I shouldn't have had that last French fry, which, why shouldn't have had that last French fry? But whatever. To, like, why take it further? Like, I just make myself stop there. And I think it's one of those things that's just a regular challenge. But at the same rate, like we're saying, like, am I a worse person for that? No. I think we all have this sense of, like, control we want to display and be like proud of, and I think we can have control and do good in other places besides just like, oh, I watch my calories and I exercise a lot.
That's
doesn't make you valuable.
He talks about like being addicted to success and why that is the case, and then so you talked about workaholics, they're addicted to work, but it's not the work that's doing it is the required successes and feeling like this is the only, I can't slip back. I've got to keep going. And they kill themselves working for money, power, and prestige, because these are forms of approval, applause, and compliments, which, like all addictive things from cocaine to social media, stimulates the neurotransmitter dopamine. Why? For some I have met, the thrill of success, albeit momentary, blots out the blackness of normal life. Achievement is a way to pull oneself above a grim baseline mood. Something is clearly wrong when the idea of being normal induces enough panic to make someone neglect the people they love in favor of the possible admiration of strangers. That's pretty good.
I want to talk about that, like, being normal.
Yeah.
So I think that comes up a lot in conversation, is like, I don't want to just be normal, or I feel like I'm just normal, or I feel like I'm not normal, but I'm not really sure what makes me different that's positive. And I think like the person who has in you, like, I know I can do something, but I don't know what that is. I think, like, I don't know, you might have a take on this. I don't know. I think that idea of like, I don't want to be average. I don't want to be normal. Like, I want to stand out more. I guess one, like, is that bad to feel that way? Should we feel that way? Does everyone feel that way? And secondary to that, like, what do you do to not be normal? Like, well, is there a problem with being normal, I guess, is what I'm kind of getting at? Because I think a lot of people feel that way. It's like, I don't want to just be like your average person.
I think that's where we have to, what's why? And I want to stand out more. Like, that's, it goes to that point about,
like, why do you want to stand out more?
Right. Applause, you know, compliments. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I probably mentioned this in a previous episode, but there was a physician, Robert Goldman, in the 80s. I remember his columns used to be in a lot of bodybuilding magazines back in the day. But he's the one who did this survey with athletes where they, half of them admitted that if they could take a pill, whatever, that would, they'd win Olympic gold medal, but they'd be dead in 5 years, they would take the pill. And it speaks to like that. That's a dramatic example of like, sure, I want to stand out. I don't want to be normal, even if it costs me my life. And I think that's where, what the heck is going on there? That's not, like, we admire, like, the person who works. Yeah, I work 14 hours a day or 15 hours a day. Or, you know, we listen to Kobe Bryant talk about, like, if I could get up at 4, that means I would get in 2 more hours of training that would put me ahead of everyone else. Well, they're still asleep. I'm training. And we high five. Like, it's awesome. Yeah, great work ethic, you know. And I think that's where we really have to be careful how we view that. And I think he became very evolved late in his career and then after, in terms of how he viewed success and failure. He really didn't define things that way. He just viewed it as everything is an opportunity to learn and grow and get better. And that's, I think, I guarantee you that's not how he saw things when he was 18 and 20. But who would? Like, find me an 18-year-old who's going to think like that.
Find an 80-year-old who's got that figured out. I mean, that's a hard thing to get in life at all, let alone early on.
Yes.
Where it's going to help you.
But that's the, like, what are we afraid of? If we're, if the things that are normal, and the woman earlier in the quote who talked about anybody can do the things it takes to be happy. Oh, really? Like spending time with your friends and your family. Really?
Yeah.
Is it that easy?
Right. That just make you happy just because that's what you're doing.
But also, I mean, they've done all these studies where, like, even he talks about in the book, like, the people who achieved the most early were the most unhappy late in life. And that's, you know, goes back to like the rates of depression after winning a gold medal.
Right.
It's really significant. And if all of these things bring happiness and fulfillment and satisfaction, why is that going on?
When you're trying to figure out like why it is that you don't want to be normal, like what is it that you're hoping for in not being normal? So like, is it praise? Is it accolades? Is it whatever? That's a hard thing to admit to yourself. It's a hard thing to sit down and really say like, yeah, it's because I want other people to think I think we tend to say, well I want to be successful. I'll make myself proud if I achieve these things. Like, what are some things that, or some journal entries or some meditations or some like prompts to ask yourself to be able to get to that deep place where you can be honest with yourself? Because that's hard. It is hard to sit down and admit to yourself, like, yeah, I want people to think that I'm really impressive, or I want people to think that I'm really strong or beautiful or drive a Ferrari or whatever it is. Like, and those are all very vain things, as pointed out, but they tend to be high on the list for people. What are some things you can do to, like, if it's hard for you to be honest with yourself, like, is there a path to really getting to that place when that's challenging?
Yes.
Sorry, I put you on the spot there, but.
It's all right. I am wise.
Oh, God.
I'm full of crap. That's what I am. Humility. In his 1964 book, Understanding Media, Marshall McLuhan famously said that the medium is the message. He noted that in the famous Greek myth, Narcissus did not fall in love with himself, but with an image of himself. And so it is when we professionally self-objectify. Our work is our medium, which is our message. We love the image of ourselves as successful, not ourselves in true life. But you are not your job, and as I have to remind myself, am not mine. At root, self-objectification is a problem of pride. In almost all philosophical traditions, pride is a deadly vice that rots a person from the inside out. Buddhists use the word mana, which in Sanskrit refers to an inflated mind that disregards others in favor of the self and leads to one's own suffering. Thomas Aquinas defined it as an excessive desire to one's own excellence, leading to misery. In Dante's Divine Comedy, Satan is depicted as a victim of his terrible pride by being frozen from the waist down, fixed and in agony, in ice created by wind from the flapping of his grotesque bat-like wings. Pride is sneaky. It hides inside good things. Success, the fruit of excellence, becomes an addiction. All because of pride. Pretty heavy.
Yeah.
He even goes on further. A cousin of pride is fear. A lot of people addicted to drugs and alcohol say that they stay addicted because they are afraid of normal life with its struggles, stresses, and boredom. Success addicts frequently have a lot of fear too. Fear of failure. I find it most among my students who are the greatest strivers because they are terrified of failing in anything. And according to a 2018 survey, 90% of CEOs admit fear of failure keeps them up at night more than any other concern. And that is the truth at the other end of this success, success, success mindset. And I'll be happy if I just win one more trophy, if I get one more promotion. And, you know, we fall in love with this image of ourselves in the mirror, whether it's a literal physical image or this image that we may have, like, I'm CEO or whatever. And it's not our true self. And that's, you know, we go back to, again, limiting and reducing ourselves to just this image that does not fulfill us. And at the end of the day, it's not even what we're created to be. It's not who we are. It's not how we're wired.
Do we start by defining that image and then trying to sift out the things that are?
Well, you know, I always go back to Jim Lehrer's three questions. What are we chasing? Why are we chasing it? Who are we becoming during the chase? I think establishing, like, why am I doing this? What are the reasons why? And you have to be brave enough to admit real reasons. You can't just say, like, well, I want to provide for my family, or, you know, if you're fully self-actualized, maybe that's why you're doing it. But usually there's a lot of ego and pride and fear to be found in all of that. You know, we talk about perfectionism and, you know, your joke about, you know, job interview. What's your greatest flaw? Well, I'm a perfectionist. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Right.
But perfectionism all stems from fear.
Yeah.
And
so if your answer to that first question of what are the three questions?
What are we chasing? Okay. Why are we chasing that, and who are we becoming?
Okay. Yeah. Let's say what if we're chasing success or monetary success or something, and the reason we are is because, and you can be self-actualized and say, because I want people to think that I'm successful, or I want to have X, Y, and Z things. Like, where do you go from there, though? Because I think it's one thing to be able to answer that question, but how do you get back and answer question one differently next time and have that different?
Why do you want people to think you're successful? Like, I know for me, like, I can use me as an example. When I first started coaching, I mean, what people thought of me wasn't the only reason I was coaching. I will say it got worse and worse the more successful we were. The more we won, the more I really wanted people to think I was good at this. That was my ego. Yeah. It was my own self-doubts, like, how good am I at this, really? Maybe I'm not that good. Maybe I'm not as good as someone who teams won all these championships. Maybe I'm lucky. And, you know, I think you have to be brave enough to really take a hard look at why you're doing this. And there's a reason why. The more we won, the less satisfaction. Yeah. I, got out of it. And it was just a relief. And then it was like, okay, now we have to win again. And it just never was going to end. And it's one thing if you view your mountaintops as like, you're just progressing and it's not, you don't want to arrive and all of, which I do. I want to keep getting better and learning and growing. But if you think that getting to that mountaintop is going to like, this is it, solid. You know,
yeah.
Then you realize that's not it. Well, I guess I get to get to that so mountaintop, temporary. Then it'll be it.
Yep.
And then you never run out of mountaintops, but you never find what you're looking for.
Yeah.
So I think that's the benefit of journaling and writing these things down, because it forces you to really think about this stuff and put your thoughts down to organize them, and you come to the realization, wow.
Yeah.
Whereas if you just kind of like daydream about it, I think it's much more difficult to come to these realizations. Yeah. That was pretty heavy.
I'll be ordering this book for sure. Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's like we hear that, oh, well, writing it down, I know you know all the statistics for those types of things, but I think it's one thing to like have it in your head, and that's where I think it's the darkest and the scariest, because it's one thing to go there in your head, but nobody else knows about it. It's one thing to say it out loud to someone, because once you say it, it's not in the air anymore. But when you write it down, and sure, you can throw the paper away and whatever, but like there is something, I think for me, and regardless of the statistics that you have for it, it's like putting it on paper and seeing yourself. I've journaled before.
Seeing yourself
write it.
Yeah.
Especially when it's like a thought that you realize is like so stupid or ridiculous or just like
irrational.
I for a while was doing just like free journaling. I didn't have any prompts. I was just writing whatever came to my mind. And I would write some things and be like, and it would be a regular thought that it was not a new thought. Or like, why would I possibly think this to be true? And I think that's one of those things where, like, if you've gotten to the point of accepting it or realizing it in your head, then it's scary to say it out loud. And it's hard to talk to people. It is very challenging to share your deepest, darkest things that you can hardly even admit to yourself with someone else. But writing it down is it Jim Lair's? Is it The Leading with Character workbook?
Comes with a journal.
Okay, so there's that one.
Yes.
Okay, that's the one I was going to order.
Yeah.
You said that's like hard. That's like a really challenging.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not easy at all. Even like when he was writing the book and he did the journal, he was in his 70s and pretty self-actualized dude. So that's the hardest thing he's ever done. He did three times. He went through the journal three different times. It's 150 days.
10 minutes a day to a brilliant legacy. Yeah. I think I'm going to add this to my cart right now.
I mean, he is awesome.
Yeah, I think that's one of those. Like, I think there are steps to take when you can put it down.
Yeah.
I think that to me is where it gets meaningful and it becomes a reminder. You can go back. I think I like to go back to my, I don't do it often, but I have gone back to my journals from the beginning and see my thoughts and see how they progress. And I think to me, that's also very meaningful to help you see progress. Because it is, I think when you're in a place where you feel like, okay, I'm realizing this, it's hard to get out of it. When's this going to end, or when am I going to be fixed? I think is always the question we want to answer, right? But like every day, like it's chipping away. It's not going to be tomorrow. It's not going to be next week. And that sometimes can sound scary, because when you're in the place of wanting to make a change or realizing that you want to be a better person, not just win the game, having a process that's going to take you along the way just can be like a little handhold, I think.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, there's some hard questions in that journal that, you want to like burn the journal after you answer them. But it's the only way out, only way forward, whatever,
There's not a magic fix. There's not a quick answer. There's not
no pill
tomorrow. And I think that's maybe confusing. Could talk forever, it seems. I think we talk a lot about like, you can decide tomorrow that you want to be a different person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can decide that you're going to end up being, but you're not going to be different tomorrow. I think that's the difference, is like, it's very easy to say, yeah, you can wake up tomorrow and decide that you're now going to be someone who wakes up at 6 a.m. and you meditate and you go to the gym and you eat healthy and you do all these things. But it's not easy. It's not instant. You don't suddenly become that person, but like slowly starting to identify.
Choice by choice.
Choice by choice every single day.
Yep.
Hard days, easy days, progress days, setback days, it's worth it.
Absolutely.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Unbound Performance Podcast.
Your support helps us continue to build our community. If you're enjoying this content, please like, subscribe, and share.